happens to be true.
Oh, it's true.
It's the broadcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast, and 106.7 FM KSO in Cottage Grove, 93 FM WLRI in Lancaster, PA, on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui, in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota, and coast to coast and around the globe, streaming on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, RadioOrNot.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR Nashville, Detour Talk in East Tennessee, and Radio Sputnik 5 days a week. Now, you know, the broadcast is usually hosted by Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, but today, it's me, Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, holding down the fort. Now, it's a big weekend as the Democrats caucus in Nevada, the Republicans vote in South Carolina, and the ugly is intense and everywhere. Now, on Thursday night, I was watching that MSNBC Democratic Forum from Nevada, and I saw what I believe is the first attack ad launched against Bernie Sanders. Of course, it was a typical attack ad. It was filled with lies, misrepresentations, and out-of-context quotes, so typical. But I was curious as to who is behind the ad. It was paid for by Future 45. So I went searching for Future 45, and thankfully, Zed Jelani wrote about it at The Intercept. And he tells us Future 45 is run by a longtime Republican operative named Brian O. Walsh, and that over the last year, Future 45 has been funded primarily by hedge fund managers, including two of Marco Rubio's personal billionaire backers, a guy named Ken Griffin, who runs Citadel, and Paul Singer. Now, when I hear the name Paul Singer, all of a sudden my ears perk up. I immediately think of investigative journalist Greg Palast, who's been on a quest to expose Singer for the, well, vulture that he is. So Greg Palast will join us later in the hour to tell us all about the vulture, Paul Singer. But first, back to that MSNBC forum, okay? Although I personally continue to be inspired by Bernie Sanders, I couldn't help but notice the ever-widening divide on the left. So I was drawn to a piece on that divide that I read at Crooks and Liars from Democratic consultant and strategist Mike Lux. I've been meaning to invite you on the show. I'm almost embarrassed to say I have not read your book, The Progressive Revolution, How the Best in America Came to Be, but I keep hearing people raving about it, so it is on my list. Howie Klein is one of those who wrote about it not too long ago, and I started hearing from listeners saying, who is this Mike Lux guy? And now you have a piece up that really, it hit home with me. It's at Crooks and Liars, and it's called New Poll Shows Deep Split in the Democratic Party. Not a very creative title, but it says what it says. We know that there is this split in the Democratic Party, and people like me are grappling with it. Did you watch the thing on MSNBC last night, the forum with Hillary and Bernie Sanders?
I had a chance to watch part of it, although it was a crazy night last night, and I've been working a lot on the court nomination fight, and there's all kinds of stuff going on with that. So I only saw part of it. But I do think what's going on is, it's very worrisome to me. I do think there's also great potential if we could figure out how to bring all this together when it's over. But the Democratic base is increasing. The good news is the Democratic base is increasingly becoming a majority of American voters. People have always talked about, each party has a base, and then there's these swing voters who decide everything. Well, the fact is, if you look at what the Democratic base is, the numbers in those base groups far outstrip Republican numbers, but also even if you include swing, and Steve Phillips has a great new book out. I don't know if you've had a chance to read it.
No, but I saw you mention it in this post at Crooks and Liars.
Yeah, so Steve basically just went through the numbers and did a deep dive and basically Steve's argument is, if you look at African Americans, Hispanics, Asian Americans, which are increasingly Democratic and progressive, they used to be more of a swing group, but now they're moving very strongly our way, and they're immigrating to this country in big numbers. You add in other immigrant groups like from Africa, from the Middle East, and other places around the world. And then you combine those with unmarried women who tend to vote heavily Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
Younger voters have been consistently voting heavily Democratic ever since 2006. So that's now, 10 years in a row. And then the traditional Democratic groups like LGBT, union members, even though it's a shrinking part of the population, still significant. Anyway, you add the numbers up, and that quote unquote base is over 55% of the electorate. And so we can win elections if we are united and turn people out. The scary thing is that base is like divided right down the middle in this Sanders-Hillary fight.
Now, when you say it's divided right down the middle, are you? I mean, how? Because again, this base is a melting pot. Gee, go figure.
Yeah.
It's what this country is supposed to be. But when you say down the middle, there are a lot of different groups in this larger group. Is it down the middle of each of the individual groups, or are you saying like a lot of the certain demographic groups, or Asians or Hispanics, are pulling for Bernie, but the whites and the African Americans are going for Hillary? What do you mean down the middle?
What I mean is the different demographic groups within that bigger majority vote are splitting for different candidates. Hillary is getting close to 2/3 of the African American vote.
Right.
If you look sort of state by state, she's getting more of the Hispanic vote. Although I think that's our poll was of Super Tuesday states, and so there weren't as many Hispanics polled in it. Texas was actually the only state where there were enough people in the poll to even have it be a subgroup that you could do crosstabs on, because a lot of Hispanics in the Deep South don't vote; they're too young, or they're not citizens yet. But Hispanics are trending toward Hillary. Some categories of unmarried women are trending toward Hillary, but others are trending toward Bernie. Bernie is getting overwhelming, as I think everyone knows, the overwhelming numbers on young people and on sort of the white progressives, the kind of classic white progressives. So some demographic groups are splitting more, but a lot of it is that the different demographic groups that are part of the Democratic base are trending heavily for one candidate or another.
That's fascinating. Now, what was it? Look, we sometimes Americans have short memories. It was a really contentious primary season 8 years ago between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And there were many of us, myself included, who thought there's no way we're going to bring these two sides together. And look, I guess we're a resilient crowd. And we realize that, as I said earlier, as much as I'm having trouble with a lot of the things Hillary Clinton says today, I find myself trying to curtail, to edit myself on the fly, because I realized that there's a 50-50 chance she could be the nominee. And even on her worst day, she's going to be better than any of the Republicans on their best. So, you know, but again, but so the challenge is, how do we come out of this hole, you know, at convention time?
Yeah. And, you know, I think a couple thoughts on that. I mean, one is that primaries are always contentious.
Yeah.
It's sort of like family fights, you know, when you're fighting with your brother or your sister or your mom, you tend to get more intense and more wigged out than if you're fighting with somebody that you barely know. Right.
Right. But then there's also you hold grudges. I have a sister I don't talk to, haven't in years. So
yes. And you hold grudges and that, you know, you see that. But at the end of the day, you know, I mean, Donald Trump or Ted Cruz, one of these characters, they're going to be great uniters for Democrats. People might not be happy if their candidate loses the primary, but they're going to take a look at Donald Trump and the crap that he's spewing, and they're going to be like, you know what, I'm more than happy to vote in this. I might not be as enthusiastic as I would have been if my candidate had won, but I, you know, I got to get to the polls, and so I do think, you know, I'm a person who I used to get involved in primary fights in the presidential all the time early in my career. That's a lot of what I did, but I've stayed out in recent years because I sort of feel like, you know, I want to stay focused on you know, the bigger prize, which is winning the general election. And so if I can help sort of bring people together after the primary is over, I think that's a better role for me right now, at least.
Well, you're going to have your work cut out for you with that. Mike Lux is with us again. DemocracyPartners.com is your sort of your co-founder of that group. Our friend Joel Silberman, who's with us most every Monday morning. And my listeners love Joel. Of course, everybody loves Joel. You know, he always he talks about messaging and how to communicate what, you know, we're saying. I can't wait till Monday, because Joel was off this week, to get his thoughts on how this race is going. I really think the challenge is going to be harder this time to bring the two sides together, because it is just, it is so ugly. And again, it may be no uglier than it was 8 years ago, because if memory serves, that was pretty down and dirty too.
Yeah, it was.
We came out okay. I want to ask you though, Mike Lux, when we started talking, you said you've been wrapped up with the court nomination fight. So I don't know if you can share anything, but this is, you know, again, we live in opposite world. You got the Republicans saying, well, Obama's only got 11 months left in his term. Sorry, he doesn't get to nominate the new justice,
right,
which is absurd. And now, you know, I just had the news, and I get a live news report from this organization that does news for talk radio shows. So obviously they've got a lot of right wingers. And Victoria Jones today said almost every single Republican host she spoke to today agrees that, of course, Obama has the right to nominate somebody and should. And there should be hearings. So this might be a case where Mitch McConnell, again, overstepped himself in his obstructive goals or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think he made a terrible mistake by coming out literally within minutes of the announcement of Scalia's death to say that they would not even consider a nominee. I think it exposed him as, you know, cravenly political, and I think that, you know, I think the first phase of the fight is really going to be a debate about process, and I don't tend to like process debates, because I don't think most people, you know, in America care. But I think in this case, phase one of this fight, it's really important that people understand how ridiculous these arguments are. I mean, and by the way, they were the opposite arguments that McConnell and other people were making back during, you know, the Bush years. They were saying every judge deserves a vote, every vote should happen soon. You know, I mean, they were saying all kinds of things like that, and now they're saying the opposite. But I mean, yesterday was the anniversary of when Anthony Kennedy was confirmed,
right,
in Reagan's last year of office. So to say that you can't do it in the last year is just blatantly absurd. And so I look, I think, honestly, I think Democrats win this one either way, because if they actually obstruct a Supreme Court justice for a year, screwing up two terms of the Supreme Court, making you know, 4-4 votes on issue after issue, I think that then the election will be about the court, and we win that. I mean, Citizens United is the most unpopular decision ever in American history, by the polling. People hate that decision. Do the Republicans want to make this about Citizens United? Do they want to make it about the Voting Rights Act? Do they want to make it about, whether cleaning up, carbon out of the atmosphere is a good idea? I mean, if they want to make that about those issues, we win that fight.
Yes.
On the other hand, obviously, it would be better to have, a sane, rational nominee be confirmed for the court. So either way, I think we win politically. Obviously, what's better for the country is to have the ninth Supreme Court justice in place.
Well, of course. And that's what reasonable, intelligent thinking adults believe. And probably, I have no doubt that if the reverse were true in an alternate universe, it's Mitt Romney who is in office and the same thing happens, that they'd be right there with a nominee. And the Democrats would never even suggest such a ridiculous thing, that the sitting president doesn't have the right to name a successor. But, here's the interesting thing. The presidential elections should always be about the Supreme Court. I have a button. And Mike, I know you used to work with People for the American Way,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
Just a brilliant, amazing organization founded by Norman Lear. I'm on the YouTube screen. I have a picture of a button. That I picked up in an event in D.C. During the 2012 election cycle. And it's a button from People for the American Way with a drawing of the Supreme Court. And underneath it says, "It's the Supreme Court, stupid," with an Obama 2012 banner beneath it. Well, actually, it should always be about the Supreme Court, because that is, I think, the most important thing that the president does is he makes a lifetime appointment to the court. And it could change, especially in this case. We've had a 5-4 Republican-leaning court, and you got Scalia, probably, not even arguably, one of the most right-wing conservative justices, certainly in recent history, leaving, and so this would tip the scales. It should always be about the Supreme Court. Will this, you think, bring it into so that the average person out there who doesn't pay as much attention as we do to politics gets that message?
Certainly, if the Republicans refuse to confirm the nominee, it will be. This is going to be every time there's a 4-4 vote, the media is going to go crazy. Every time there's a decision that they decide they need to wait on, the media is going to go crazy. This is going to be such a central issue. And that's why I say this would be, if politically this would be a dream for the Democrats. We would so win this fight, and I would be, I'd be delighted to have this be the number one issue in the election. Because as you say, it should be every time.
Should be.
But it rarely is. It rarely has been in the past. But I do think this would change everything. You know, if they end up caving and they give us, the confirmation, it might be less so. But the debate about this, I think, is going to teach people a lot about the court and make a difference.
Good. Well, good.
And how people view it. So.
That's important. I'm glad to hear it. All right, Mike Lux, final question, and it's a two-parter. You are a consultant and a strategist. You work with candidates, of course, progressive candidates. If you were asked for one piece of advice to both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, what would you say to each of them?
Well, I actually wrote a piece right after New Hampshire, right after Iowa, where I said, "Hillary, embrace your inner Bernie." and my advice in that piece to her was, you know, you're not going to win this election, either the primary or the general, by doing this small ball stuff. You know, the frame that has developed about the incrementalist versus the big ideas guy, Bernie is going to win that race. And I think it is such a mistake for her to go small on everything and to say she doesn't, you know, she doesn't think big change is possible. She doesn't want to make big change. That Bernie's unrealistic. I think that is a terrible political strategy. And so my number one bit of advice to her, is to change that dynamic. My number one bit of advice to Bernie's campaign is, I would say that the great thing about Bernie and the potential weakness of Bernie is that he is so focused on his message. He's one of the best candidates I've ever seen for staying focused on one message. And that's a great, great thing. It's a strength. But I also think what I would advise, and this partly comes out of watching the town hall last night, is Bernie really needs to listen to voters as he's out campaigning, and to really respond to their concerns and their sometimes nuanced worries about the issues. I don't think he always does that very well. Because he's so focused on his message, and his message is great, and it's obviously it's working well for him, but I think he's so focused on it that he sometimes forgets to really answer people's questions and to really listen to what folks are saying. So anyway, that would be my advice for Bernie.
Okay, one last question: did you ever in a million years think that now on February 19th, as we're heading into the Nevada caucus tomorrow, that it would be a competitive race on the Democratic side?
You know, I thought it might be, but I didn't think it would be this competitive. You know, I actually thought that Bernie might do as well as he did in Iowa. I thought he would win New Hampshire, but I didn't know if he'd have sort of staying power after that. But clearly he does. He seems to be surging in Nevada. We don't know because it's a caucus, and caucuses are notoriously hard to poll. But he seems like he's got some legs in this race and some running room and. We're living in very, very unique political times. And a decade ago, I would have said that, you know, I'm not going to see a black president in my lifetime, let alone one with an African Muslim name. And not that long ago, I would have said we'll never see a socialist, openly socialist president,
or a Jewish president,
or a Jewish president. I mean, we're living in wild times, and I do think people need to open their minds and realize there's a lot more that's possible than we realize in American politics, both good and bad, by the way. I mean, it's the it could never happen here thing obviously is not true, because Donald Trump could be our next president. Ted Cruz could be our next president.
Or Bernie Sanders could be our next president.
You know? Or Bernie Sanders could be our next president. And I think people need to open their minds and realize that there is more possible in our politics than the sort of narrow range of choices we've traditionally had. So, and I think that's a lot more good than bad.
Right. Absolutely. We are no longer relegated to the lesser of two evils.
Exactly. Exactly. We need to realize that and think that way about our politics.
Great. And Mike Lux, thank you so much. What a great conversation. I really appreciate it. The book is that we should all pick up, The Progressive Revolution, How the Best in America Came to Be. Check out democracypartners.com. You work with a whole great crew of people over there working within that, under that umbrella. Mike Lux, great talking with you. Really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Nicole. It's fun to be on.
Find Mike Lux on the Twitters at Progressive Lux, that's LUX, or at democracypartners.com. I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, your trusty guest host for today's edition of The Bradcast. We'll take a quick break and come back with Greg Palast, investigative journalist, to tell us all about Paul the Singer Vulture next.
Hey, this is Brad. Do you enjoy your non-corporatized, commercial-free Bradcast? Yeah, me too. But we need your help to stay that way. Please consider supporting the investigative blogging, broadcasting, and muckraking that we do here on the Bradcast and the Green News Report and bradblog.com with a donation. It's easy. Stop by bradblog.com/donate and drop a few dollars in the tip jar. You can make a one-time contribution or an automatic monthly donation of any amount you like. It's easy. It'll take you about 60 seconds, and you'll help me and Desi stay on the air to continue our troublemaking and muckraking without the corporate influence of anyone. Got it? Thanks. Stop by bradblog.com/donate to help us out today.
All right, welcome back to the Bradcast. Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com in for Brad and Desi today. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I happened to be watching the MSNBC Democratic Forum on Thursday night when I saw what I believe is the first Super PAC attack ad launched at Bernie Sanders. So I wanted to find out who was behind it. It was a group called Future 45, and it turns out that one of the biggest contributors to Future 45 is Paul the Vulture Singer. When I hear the name of Paul Singer, I think of one investigative reporter. Joining us on the line is an old friend. He is an investigative journalist at a time when that profession might be a dying breed, when we need more of them. Greg Palast, hi, welcome to the Bradcast.
Lovely to be with you once again.
I think about you often. I know you're doing great work, and I know that, you know, oftentimes you sort of disappear when you're in the middle of a big story, but I thought of you. I thought of you yesterday when I saw this smear ad, an attack ad on Bernie Sanders that was put out by a group called Future 45. And so I started Googling Future 45 to find out who these people are. And I found a great piece by Zed Jelani at The Intercept that explains Future 45 is this super PAC run by a longtime Republican operator named Brian Walsh. But that over the last year, Future 45 has been funded primarily by hedge fund managers, and they named two who happen to be Rubio's personal billionaires, one a guy named Ken Griffin, and the other Paul Singer. And the minute I saw Paul Singer, I thought, got to call Greg Palast, because I learned all about Paul Singer from you and your book, Vulture's Picnic. Did you know that Paul Singer was running smear ads against Bernie Sanders?
Of course he is, and I certainly know that, and he knows that one of the reasons I've been quiet is I've been on the hunt for Mr. Singer. He's been on the hunt for me. It's like Moriarty and Holmes, and I have been tracking this guy. He really is. He is almost the cartoon evil genius. Paul Singer, his nickname is the Vulture. Mm-hmm. And I think, and that's from his, that was given to him by his friends. I kid you not. He is and his investors, because he is, there are, let's put it this way, like most corpse chewers, he's shunned even by the bankers and by, you know, like Goldman Sachs think he is an evil, greedy capitalist. That's how they've written about him.
Wow.
So in Goldman Sachs, and J.P. Morgan and Citibank say you are a greedy, evil capitalist. Take my word for it. This guy is a serious piece of work. In fact, I have a very good close-up of him at gregpalast.com under an article called Who Hatched Rubio?
I'm looking at it
Singer
right now.
Singer the Vulture.
It's a gift.
Yes, he's chewing on the... Right. And so if you go to gregpalast.com, I don't want people to miss this this special inside info. So let me tell you about Singer, and it's for two things. Number one, the Koch brothers are not the top donors to the Republican Party, despite Lay's mythology. They're not even Republicans, by the way. Paul Singer, Paul the Vulture, is, in fact, the number one donor to the Republican Party. He is number one backer of Karl Rove, little nasty vote suppression operation called American Crossroads. He's the number one donor to, and he is the number one leading donor to Marco Rubio.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting is Singer has got a lot of protection from the press. Like, you won't hear a bad word on MSNBC about this guy. Why? And let me tell you how he makes his money. This is first, so this is very important to know. I've been on the hunt for this guy, for BBC Television and The Guardian newspapers, for 9 years.
Wow.
This is a billionaire. He's listed as $3 billion. That's probably a third of his wealth. But he's a whatever. He's a multi-billionaire. And the way he makes it is he does feast off of dead things, dead nations, dead people, dead corporations. I kid you not. My first investigation of him took me to the Congo, where he had figured out how to seize, and I'm not making this up, the funds meant to end the cholera epidemic in the Congo.
Oh my!
The Congo had there are two nations called Congo. The Congos had the civil wars, which took the lives of 3 million people. They are now back in somewhat democratic nations now with economies that are trying to grow. And Singer, during the civil war and cholera epidemic, bought some old junk bonds issued by one of the old Congo, Republic of Congo dictatorship. And he paid about $10 million for these worthless pieces of paper. You and I, as American taxpayers, wrote off all the debt that the Congo owed us. So now they have a new government. Let's give them a chance. Just write off all the money that they owe us. And so did Europe and the World Bank and everyone. But that meant that the only guy left holding Congo debt was the vulture. So when we wrote off billions of dollars, you and I, the taxpayers, we then sent Congo money to end the cholera epidemic, and Singer said, oh, I've got these old bonds, and he demanded and got over $100 million for his $10 million so-called investment, and that's 1,000% return. That's nothing. Then he hit another third-world nation, the third-world nation of Detroit, of the U.S. auto industry. During this is an unknown story because he made sure that it was buried in the U.S., even though I put it on the cover of Nation magazine. Then that's another way to bury things, is that he, during the auto bailout, Paul the Vulture Singer, now if you just come in, Paul the Vulture Singer, this is Greg Pallas, Paul the Vulture Singer is the number one backer of Marco Rubio,
right.
He's the number one backer of Future 45,
mm-hmm.
which is running hit ads against Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton,
yep. Yep.
And he's the number one backer of Karl Rove in the Republican Party. So the Vulture in the U.S., when GM went into bankruptcy and Chrysler went into bankruptcy during the auto bailout, he secretly grabbed control of the General Motors Auto Parts division, which had been turned into a separate company called Delphi, you know, the old Delco batteries.
Sure, right.
He told the U.S. government, if you don't give me and my partners, $12 billion, we're cutting off GM's parts, literally. We will not ship parts to GM. Now, you have to understand, shipping parts to GM, these factories are all together in one, literally sometimes same building. And GM, the government said, how long can you go without the parts from the Vulture? And the chairman of General Motors said, 24 hours.
Oh, boy.
So President Obama authorized giving this guy $12 billion. Oh. It was pure extortion. And, in fact, the Treasury Department called it extortion, but they paid it. Then he went down to Argentina. Okay, the guy made a 3,000% profit. 3,000% profit. Personally put $1 billion in his pocket. Then he ran down to Argentina, got some old Argentine debt from the old Argentine dictatorship. Our current government, an allied government. He then demanded for his $50 million. He demanded $3 billion. Again, he wanted a 6,000% profit immediately. And then he not only sued Argentina, he sued all the major banks, he sued everyone. He basically said, I'm going to bring down the entire economy of the Western Hemisphere, because he could bankrupt several banks, big banks.
Greg
Palast, bring down the economy of the Western Hemisphere unless you pay me money. There's a new government which just, he wanted $3 billion. They just offered him $6 billion. Now he said, no, I want more.
We'll get back to this in a second. But Greg Palast, let me ask you, he's breaking laws. Extortion is illegal. Mm-hmm. How does he get away with this? Why is Paul the Vulture Singer still walking around?
There are two reasons. One, his activities are illegal in place in most of the world, but not the U.S., because he owns so many politicians. He owns, like I say, he owns Marco Rubio.
Right.
And in fact, Marco Rubio was out there. Marco Rubio made unethical, and I don't use that term lightly, mm-hmm. he made unethical approaches to the State Department to tell the State Department to put pressure on our ally, Argentina, to give in to to his extortionate demands on Argentina. It is pure extortion. But it's illegal in most of the world, but not in the U.S. because he owns too many politicians, and therefore he gets the protection. Now, I have to say that Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, went into U.S. federal court to stop the Vulture from his attack on our ally Argentina. And he's furious. I mean, her statement to the court was, this guy's going to bring down the world financial system. He is a danger. Mm-hmm. Stop him now. And so that's it. That's why he immediately said, okay, lady, I'll tell you what. He's going to put in his millions, and I wouldn't be surprised if he'll put in $100 million this year, to wipe out Hillary Clinton. Then he sees Bernie on the rise, also going out against people like him, hedge fund managers. And so he's attacking Bernie, too. In attacking Bernie, here's a guy who's worth at least $3 billion minimum.
Right.
And he is attacking Bernie's call for a higher minimum wage.
Right, because he's, look.
A really nice guy.
Right. Well, but you look at the company he keeps. I don't know if they pal around, but they're in the same financial bracket. You look at, Donald Trump, who anytime he mentions Bernie, he calls him crazy. He says he's a communist, and he wants to raise your taxes to 95%, all of which are lies. But this is what they do. The thing is, why don't we know, people who read Greg Palast know who Paul Singer is, but why doesn't the American public know his name like they know the Koch brothers' names or, Donald Trump is an animal unto himself. But why isn't Paul Singer as well known as the Koch brothers?
Because there are two reasons. We have a scared press and we have a lazy press. And when I say scared, let me tell you something. I put that story I told you, and which you can still, by the way, get at gregpalast.com about how Paul the Vulture Singer extorted $12 billion from the U.S. Treasury. He was on the cover of Nation magazine the week before the 12 election. And by the way, the reason it was on the cover is called Romney's Bailout Billionaires, because the secret partner, Paul Singer's secret partner, is the so-called blind trust of Ann Romney.
Wow.
Like that? Okay, so he put $100 million into the Romney's pockets. People think that Romney made his money from Bain. That's not true. It came from Paul the Vulture. And what happened is I put out that story on the cover, and the AP was about to cover it, which would put it in every American newspaper. And then the AP reporter told me that he was, for the first time in his 30-year career, he was called by his bosses in Washington and said, you may not touch the story. You can't even say that Greg Palast and the Nation allege and Singer denies or whatever he wants to say. You cannot breathe a word of this story. His minions call up and threaten stations. I wouldn't be surprised if you get a call threatening you. He called up, his goons called up BBC television and said, back off Palast stories on Paul Singer, because in Britain, my stories are at the top of the nightly news. The stories about Singer have been front page news everywhere in the world. The entire front page of the Guardian newspaper that goes all over the world. But in the U.S., everyone's scared. He called BBC television and said, back off don't carry Palace story. We have a file on Greg Palace.
Ooh.
You know, so he has a deep, nasty file on me. But see, my producers had more guts at BBC in Britain. They said, well, yeah, so you have a file on Greg Palace. You want to send us a copy? No problem. But we're going to run this. We're going to run his file on you.
Ooh.
And see, no newspaper in the U.S. would dare touch it. There was one single negative report on Singer many years ago in the New York Times. That reporter, I've looked for his byline, has never been heard from again in the pages of the New York Times. And since then, there have been several glowing reports about him, about Paul the Vulture Singer. And go to you're listening to Greg Palast, go to gregpalast.com. You can see Who Hatched Rubio, Paul the Vulture Singer. And one of the reasons he has protection, too, is he gets all these glowing stories because he's the number one backer, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Funder of the movement for gay marriage rights. His son is married to a man. So now you have to ask yourself, how could a guy whose son is married to a man, okay,
yeah,
how could he back a guy like Rubio who wants to literally turn his son's marriage into a crime? How could you do that to your own family? The answer is because the one thing a billionaire wants is another billion. And he would throw his son under a bus. He would tag his son as a criminal and break up his marriage. Why? Because Rubio is doing everything he wants. And by the way, you might ask, why doesn't he back his billionaire crony Trump or Jeb?
Yeah.
You know when he came out against Jeb and it came out again and wouldn't and has and doesn't like Trump? Because Trump and Jeb have joined Hillary and Bernie. This is the weirdest combination ever.
Trump and Jeb.
Hillary and Bernie. Okay. Trump and Jeb,
yeah,
agree on one thing, that Paul Singer and his buddies who get a special tax rate, a special tax loophole called carried interest,
right,
which is how Romney kept paid so low. The reason Romney's tax are so low is this loophole called carried interest. It only applies to hedge fund billionaires. And those four said that loophole has to close immediately. Singer endorsed Rubio.
Wow. Because
and kicked the legs out under Jeb Bush and, you know, is at war with his billionaire buddy Trump. Because Trump says, you know, at least I build casinos and hotels. Does I actually build something? You know, whatever else you think of Trump, you know, he builds stuff.
Right,
you know?
Right.
He ripped off the United States Treasury. He's attacking our ally Argentina again. Hillary Clinton stood directly in his way. It made him furious. He was going to just destroy her. And then he realized, he started running attack ads for her. And he realized, oh, no, if I run attack ads against Hillary, I'm going to end up with Bernie, not exactly a guy who's going to kiss a hedge fund manager on the mouth, right? So then he has to attack Bernie, too. And then he had to get rid of Bush because Bush came out on the wrong side of his tax loophole. And so we end up with little Marco dancing to his tune. Marco Rubio, by the way, besides making unethical demands on the State Department to back this guy against our ally, he should never, no senator ever, ever should go to the State Department to ask that foreign policy be changed for his donor. I mean, that's about as creepy as it gets. But Rubio then made another switch. You know, when Griffin, you know, is backing money and others are attacking Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is in bankruptcy,
right,
but they can't officially declare bankruptcy. Rubio, because there's so many Puerto Ricans in Florida, had originally said, well, this is crazy. Why can't Puerto Rico have the same rights as any other American territory or state? Only Puerto Rico is not allowed to go to a bankruptcy court for help, like Donald Trump has done four times, as he's pointed out. Why can't Puerto Rico? And the answer is because Singer's buddies are attacking Puerto Rico, and so they don't want Puerto Rico to have bankruptcy protection. And so Rubio switched his position because of his backers. I mean, that's about as creepy as it gets. He sided with his own backers against his own constituents. And, you know, Puerto Rico, that is America. These are American
yes,
citizens.
It is.
But right now I'm making a film.
Yes.
Based on my books, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy and Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. And it's going to have an entire section on Paul the Vulture Singer. I have twice done stakeouts. I've done four stakeouts on this guy. He's the slipperiest of all the billionaires. You know, for those who know Greg Palast, I do old gumshoe investigative reporting.
Yes.
That means stakeouts at dawn and stuff like that. This is the one guy who's always on the lookout for me. And, in fact, I went to a Rubio, he held a Rubio fundraiser in New York, and I snuck in with a pretty second-rate disguise, I will admit, and under a false name, and two guys who looked like Steven Seagal's bigger brothers, surrounded me and bumped, you know, just literally physically, sandwiched me, and then started talking to Singer in through little Dick Tracy radios in their sleeves. I can't make this up. They're talking in their sleeves. We've got Greg Palast. So I decided I'd interview Mr. Singer through this galoot sleeve. So I said, Mr. Singer, why exactly do you need to buy the White House? You know, and what use do you have for buying the White House for Marco Rubio? And I didn't get an answer through the sleeve, but I'll get an answer yet.
All right. I know you will. And so is that on video?
I do have it on video. Mm. Wait till the film comes out.
The best democracy money can buy is currently being produced. And you're doing, you know, what we do, asking for your readers, your viewers to join in and be producers, be citizen producers. And all the details are at gregpalast.com. Of course, when you speak with Greg Palast, you know he's never working on just one thing. And certainly he had a few words to say about the death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. So we'll take a break, come back on the other side with more from investigative journalist Greg Palast. With me, your guest host, Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, on the broadcast.
One more, Nicole. She's on live Monday through Friday from 10 to noon Eastern Time and repeating all day at RadioOrNot.com. Listen anytime.
All right, we are back. Nicole Sandler in for Brad and Desi at the Bradcast. We're still speaking with investigative journalist Greg Palast, who was telling us a lot about Paul the Vulture Singer. But of course, Greg Palast also has a Scalia story to share. And it has to do with voter suppression. I know, you're shocked.
In 2005, Indiana was the first state to have a nasty voter ID law. What I mean by nasty, it said you have to have a current photo ID. 10 nuns walking, this is not a, it sounds like an opening of a bad joke, right? 10 nuns walk into a polling station, right? And the poll workers say, scram, sisters, you can't vote here because you need a photo ID, and they all produce their driver's licenses, which photo IDs. And they said no good because the driver's licenses had expired. Well, of course, because the sisters were all in their 80s and 90s and no longer, gratefully, drove.
Right.
But they kept their driver's licenses. Just because their driver's licenses expired doesn't mean that they expired. It's still them and their faces. But they could not vote. This actually went to the Supreme Court. So the 10 nuns go to the voting booth. They're told scram, sisters, because they have no good ID. It goes to the Supreme Court. Why? Because while some of the press covered the 10 nuns getting booted from the polling booth because it was a cute story, what they left out was 78,000 African-Americans in Indiana lost the right to vote. Why? Because those were the African-Americans who don't have driver's licenses because they don't have cars. So people in America who don't have driver's licenses tend to be, meaning students, poor folk, especially African-Americans and Hispanic,
right,
and the elderly. Guess how they vote? Okay, an Indiana judge, a federal judge, looked at the law and said, this is racially offensive, and it is. And his quote is, it's a thinly veiled attempt to eliminate voting groups who skew Democratic. And he said, guess what? You can't do that.
Good
you can't
him.
Say Democrats can't vote here. Black people can't vote. So so it went to the Supreme Court. And Scalia, who's known as the great jokester from the bench, and always the butt of his jokes are poor people, the injured, those harmed, people facing execution. Those
yeah.
are the
yeah.
those are the people always the butt of his jokes. So he said, so the state of Indiana said, our, you know, we're not discriminating against poor people and people who don't have cars, because you can always go get a non-driver photo ID from the from a county seat. The ACLU and the other organizations bringing the case, they brought in experts. They said it takes a minimum. The average voter, poor voter, lives 17 miles from a county seat. It takes two buses in each direction on average to get to the county seat. Then you have to have papers. You have to pay fees, which are like a poll tax. And it's a lost day of work. It's an all-day operation,
sure.
which, you know, wealthier white people, people with passports, like Paul the Vulture Singer, don't have to worry about. And why should it be current? I mean, does it matter if someone's still driving or not? What does that have to do with voting? And here's the thing. In 100 years of record keeping, not one single person has been found to commit the crime of voting using someone else's identification,
right.
using someone else's name. Impersonation fraud literally doesn't exist in America. There's something like, and I looked it up, there are about 3 cases a year in out of a third of a billion Americans of impersonation fraud and voter fraud. Yet here to prevent this non-crime, 78,000 African Americans lost their vote, and to today, this is now costing about 5 million people the right to vote. As these once Scalia's decision came down, and by the way, so Scalia, by the way, and I said that there were 17 miles between the voter and the county offices. Scalia's smart ass quip was, well, whether you're black or white, 17 miles is 17 miles. Whether you're rich or poor, 17 miles is 17 miles. Now, I happen to know that Scalia had a black BMW.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 17 miles in a black... I know this because he got a ticket for reckless driving. One of our weirder destinations. In a Beamer going 65, you're talking a 15-minute cruise. Yes, and it doesn't... And it, he's probably correct. Whether your Beamer... Whether your BMW is black or white... It's still just a 15-minute cruise to cover those 17 miles.
Yeah.
But not for a poor, not for the poor folk who have to take two buses, take off a day of work. Why in America are we setting up Jim Crow obstacle courses? You know, and what I was also saying in the serious side of this, always he was snide about the weak and defenseless. So, you know, again, it didn't matter if it takes these people this time to vote, because he is a partisan. This is the guy that was the big promoter of Bush v. Gore. Now, where yep. in the Constitution does it say that Judge Scalia, his vote to pick George Bush as president counts more than millions of Americans' votes? In the state of Florida, as you know, I did the busted the story about how Catherine Harris and dear Jeb Bush knocked off tens of thousands of black people, calling them felons when their only crime was voting while black, and not a single one was an illegal vote. Not one was an illegal voter. And Scalia, ignoring that evidence, said, well, I'm going to pick Bush. And he said, this case will have no precedent, because he knew it was like nonsense law. He's just picking a president for us against the will. You know, even the Republicans admitted that Gore won, even if they want to fight about Florida. He certainly won the plurality of the national vote. This is the Democratic choice, and this guy single-handedly overturned the rights, the voting rights of Americans by basically throwing out the votes of black voters, always going after the defenseless. He called himself an originalist. You know, he goes back to the original intent of the framers. My behind. Forget it. There is no way that, okay, first of all, you know, and let's also remember that the framers, that Thomas Jefferson didn't write the 14th and 15th Amendment. The 15th Amendment is very clear. It says neither the federal government nor the states may deny the right to vote to people on the basis of race.
Yeah.
And it's right there in the law. And the abolitionist who wrote the law, believe me, did not think that they were authorizing Justice Scalia to put roadblocks in the way of black people voting. So all over the South, and don't forget, this was he was one of the right-wing five who traded their black robes for white sheets to eliminate a gut, basically, it's still standing, the shell of it, the Voting Rights Act of 1965. In part of my filming was to go back down to Selma, Alabama, where the push for the Voting Rights Act began when Martin Luther King led thousands across a bridge. Four died on that march. Hundreds were beaten and bled.
Yep.
And Scalia said, oh, official racism in blocking black people from voting, blocking people of color from voting, that's been, quote, and this is the quote, eradicated.
Right.
And this is the guy who just knocked out 78,000 black voters out of Indiana and opening the door to 5 million people losing their right to vote because they don't have current ID. It got to the point where he even authorized in places like Wisconsin that if you are a student with a photo ID, you can't vote.
Right.
You can't use your gun license.
Exactly. And that's the thing. And that's the thing that Brad Friedman is always pointing out. It has nothing to do with showing a photo ID to prove that you're who you say you are. It's the voter ID restrictions, where there's restrictions on what you can use to prove you're who you say you are, that are so unfair. I mean, that's the basic thing. If all they wanted to do was for you to prove that you are who you say you are, fine. You know, your signature is on file when you register to vote. Why don't they, computers now, pull up the signature card online. You compare the signature, boom, you're in. Because it's not about verifying people. It's about keeping people from voting. It's not about a photo ID. It's about the photo ID restrictions that are in place to keep people who would vote Democratic from voting. GregPalast.com is where you can get all this information. Greg Palast, it is always a pleasure. I can't thank you enough for jumping on with us today.
And I should also add, if you go to GregPalast.com, you can download my full color comic book, which I did with Ted Rall and Bobby Kennedy. And it's free to download, which includes the story of the nuns on the run from Justice Scalia.
Right. That's Steal Back Your Vote, which is still relevant today. So go to GregPalast.com and get it. And that brings us to the end of another episode of Brad Blogs Bradcast. I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com. Follow me on the Twitters at Nicole Sandler, or come over to Radio or Not and check out my show. Brad and Desi will be back for the next exciting episode of the Bradcast. As always, thanks for listening. And as Brad says, good luck, world.